Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are just looking at what's going on in and around the economy, perhaps looking back at the unrest from last week. We had quite a deep dive that we took last week on Friday, but for this week, we're sort of now, you know, quote-unquote in the aftermath, just hoping that there are no more flare-ups that we have to go through. And to help us to unpack some of the issues, especially from an investment point of view, because that's actually become one of the big issues, to say what did the unrest from last week mean for South Africa as an investment destination, because the unrest affected the two biggest economic contributors to GDP, that is Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, right? That's the first thing. And then more importantly, what does this mean? One of the themes we've also been speaking about is the fact that we're seeing some flare-ups in other parts of the world. Is this a trend that's not only endemic to South Africa? What does this mean for the global economy? But more importantly, because South Africa is an emerging market, what does it mean for itself and the rest of its peers? And for today, the Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, Adrian Pask, is going to be helping us to delve deeper into some of these issues. Adrian, good day to you.
Hi, Mudiwa. Thank you for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for being with us. Usually, when we begin our shows, we try to get a sense of the organization and, you know, our guests, the context within which they are coming from. So you, Adrian, as the CIO over at PSG Wealth, I think in the world of investments, anyone who follows, you know, knows who PSG is. But for those that may not necessarily be coming from that background or are familiar, you know, because we do have a lot of international people that do listen and people that are not from the world of investments. Could you give us some insight, PSG, and your specific role at the company?
Okay, yeah, sure. So PSG Consult is a listed entity. It's a diversified financial services provider. And we essentially have three core services or businesses that we operate. The one is a traditional insurance business, largely focused on commercial lines, but there's also some retail lines as well. Next to that, we've got our asset management business operated out of the Cape, but has international coverage, so local and offshore portfolios being managed by that team. And the wealth business where I'm involved is the largest independent financial advisor in the country. And that business has a obviously an advisor force that provides wealth management services. And then there's a securities business tied to that, so a stockbroking business, and also a fund platform. And in addition to that, a multi-manager business, which I head up, and then also put forward some research views together with that in terms of managing product as well. So we look at the research equity portfolios and then fund portfolios in the component where I'm involved. As a wealth business, we have roughly a quarter of a trillion rand under advice. And of that, roughly 120 billion sits within our multi-manager business.
Quarter of a trillion. No. That's a proper big number. So I guess that helps us to understand, you know, the context from which, you know, we are approaching this conversation. So from that point of view, because that's been one of the big things that people are asking, is to say, we've seen unrest last week. What does it mean for either South Africa's investment case or the stability of investments in South Africa? And you, I think I saw something that you wrote earlier this week, sort of highlighting the fact that, but I think even before we get into that note, just your thoughts around what's happened, you know, earlier this month, the unrest that we saw in, you know, those parts of South Africa.
Yeah, so there's obviously also, you know, quite controversial views around it, but I think it's obvious to say that it's quite disturbing and upsetting to most of us. You know, it's deeply damaging to the economy. It's deeply damaging to the South African brand as a country. We are desperately trying to get foreign investors interested in what we have to offer. So these things do quite a lot of harm. We look at the immediate infrastructure impact, and we've done that assessment. But I think there's second round effects here that also need to be factored in. So, I mean, we are aware of the claims against Sasria, and there's been a lot of debate around their ability to pay. And obviously also there's a broader immediate GDP impact as well. And then, as I said, on a second round, looking to the medium longer term, how do you restore confidence in foreign investors as a country and even local investors that are becoming increasingly skeptical? So that's the one view. On the other side of that, we also see, on the back of larger scale populism around the globe, that there has been more unrest around the globe. So that's another thing to factor in. But in South Africa, I think, you know, something that stuck with me through this period is a discussion with Justice Malala a few years back when we had a discussion with him on, you know, where the country is going. And one of the comments that he did make is that it's very unlikely that you see large-scale political change in the country without civil unrest, if you just look at some of the history. So it's something that we should expect. And I, you know, it's quite a terrifying comment. I mean, he's an experienced guy, a political analyst, and you hear these things. And that comment for me just sort of came back into my memory, as we saw these events. So I think the other perspective, you know, it's very difficult if you are a resident in KwaZulu-Natal and you are protecting your home, and at the same time you don't want to be, you know, unsympathetic to that type of situation. But at the same time, you know, I can't help but think maybe it was something that was always on the cards, considering that we are going through such a big change at the moment. I think some of the changes around tackling corruption head on in a very visible way, you know, just to a certain extent, that was going to escalate. And I think we've seen the worst of it now, actually.
You know, that statement, you're right, it is scary when you do think about it. And especially given what's happened over the last couple of weeks, it does have a real sort of tangible sense to it, that those words are no longer just conjecture, and that there's an element of realism that, you know, is backing that type of thing. But I want to touch on, you know, something that you said just now. And I think I saw a note that you wrote earlier this week about the fact that South Africa is not the only country that is experiencing, you know, some of this type of unrest. And a lot of it, you know, people are talking a lot about the politics, but I think, you know, part of the discussion is also the economic structures that people are, you know, find themselves in. People aren't happy with the their own particular economics. And, you know, one doesn't even need to go too far into the world, you know, to look for examples, because, you know, just a few weeks ago we had flare-ups in Eswatini, previously known as Swaziland, right? So what do you make of, you know, some of this unrest that we're seeing around the world? Is this like a moment where people are grappling with the structure of the global economy, or would you say that, I don't know, it's just a general sense of unrest, just given the pressure that COVID-19 has had on all of us around the world?
No, I would think there's definitely an element of truth to some COVID-19 induced pressure on that. But even prior to COVID's arrival, we can cast our minds back to some other political events around Trump's election, and itself was quite controversial at the time. Brexit has to do with that as well. A lot of talk around populism in that 2015, 2016 years as well. So it's been something that's been coming. And I think, you know, there's so many things that we've seen as risks on the periphery that's been accelerated through COVID. So if the divide between rich and poor was an issue in 2017 and 18, it was accelerated now in 2020. Again, we see a lot of communication out there around the divide between the poor and the rich. So it's definitely taken acceleration through this COVID period. And I think that's why we've seen more of this. If you actually look at the statistics around riots and protests and similar, we've actually seen 25 riots related to COVID-19 specifically. So it does indicate that there is a problem. You only need to think back earlier this year to recall what happened in the US and in Washington DC as well. So it's not even a case where it's only relevant to emerging markets either. We've seen this in some of the developed markets as well. So a strong emphasis on COVID-19, but what is also quite noteworthy is there's a global peace index that's put together where that actually indicates that over the past 10 years, we've seen a 244% increase in these, they call it anti-government demonstrations. So it is definitely something that is accelerating. And, you know, unfortunately, it has a big impact on the broader community. And that's what we've seen in South Africa specifically, which is negative. And the longer term consequences can be quite severe. So it is something that needs to be addressed, more proactively for sure. I think in some cases, you know, whether it's, you know, taking a view as a government around putting policies in place to reduce that, let's call it gap between rich and poor, which I think many countries have policies in place. The problem is they take time to implement it successfully. And on the other hand, what we've seen in South Africa is more to do with having proper, reactions in place for reacting promptly. I think we still see a lot of commentary around what we did see could have been avoided if only there was sharper and more decisive action taken by the Defence Force, for example. So I think it's going to take some fundamental changes in how societies make up. And at the same time, you know, we can't be ignorant to the fact that these things take time. So as an interim measure, we're going to have to focus on how we address these flare-ups more proactively so that they don't get out of control. Because the irony of it all is obviously the more damage that's done, the bigger that divide gets. That's where the tension sits. So you're actually worsening the situation through those unrest situations.
And then, you know, when it comes to all the different factors that you've highlighted for us around the world, the state of the global economy, the state of, economic structures around the world, that gap between rich and poor, the fact that people are, you know, trying to, I guess, rebel in some instances, you know, against what they see as a toxic status quo. Because you are investing, you are helping people, advising them with their money, you are a chief investment officer. How does all of this factor into the way that you as PSG Wealth, you know, then advise your clients? Because I'm pretty sure that there is that mix between people that are looking to either save and invest in South Africa and those that are looking to save and invest overseas or offshore. So how does all of this that we're seeing locally and internationally feed into your thinking when you're advising clients?
That's an excellent question. I think, you know, for us in a wealth management business, it's key to understand that a lot of the value that we provide focuses on avoiding mistakes. So the key difference between a traditional asset manager business and a wealth management business is in the wealth management space, you're working directly with the individual, where in the asset management space, you're running a portfolio. You're not necessarily in direct contact with the broader client segment out there. Where wealth managers need to look clients in the eye and guide them through periods like this. So it's not necessarily always about just picking the best investments out there. A lot of it has to do with keeping clients calm. So what you typically see through periods of stress, like the one we've seen more recently, the big one from last year, in those sell-offs, clients become obviously very emotional as well, because you've got your nest egg, you see what's happening to the value of that, and you get concerned. And often what we do see in the industry is, you know, people tend to flock to safe haven assets. So if you look at industry flows across unit trusts last year, 90% of the flows went into money market funds and fixed income portfolios. So that just goes to show that investors are panicking and disinvesting from other investments into more conservative products. But since then, the market has recovered. Off its low base, the equity market has rallied 70-80%, and many of those investors cashed in on low levels and disinvested at the worst possible time. So what a good wealth manager does through that period is to have a conversation with the client to say, you know, we acknowledge the prevailing conditions and there are risks here, but we've seen this before. In reality, these events aren't really as unique as they might seem when you're sitting in the eye of the storm. So if you look at the S&P 500, for example, over the last 70 years, we've seen corrections between 10 and 20%, almost 40 times now. And in addition to that, you typically find a market correction of more than 20%. Typically every 5 years at least. We've actually seen two just in the last 4 years, between 2018 and then last year. So these things happen. It's not always civil unrest. It's not always a cabinet reshuffle or a situation in the US. But there's always something that's going to happen and markets react to that. But the key is to have a really long-term perspective and appreciate that your portfolio is constructed in a way that's aimed at delivering a certain return. And what's already factored in that recommendation from the wealth manager is that we will see these events over your investment journey. And then just reinforce that with the client to say, we are actually prepared for this. We have a diversified portfolio of assets, which is another key measure in terms of mitigating some of that risk. There really isn't another solution. You can't avoid all these scenarios. No one has a crystal ball. And at the same time, you'll do yourself a lot more harm if you just invest in conservative assets for a long period of time, because you will struggle to get inflation beating returns out of that. So I think the key is to still have risk exposure and just navigate the situations. And the best way to do that is to proactively diversify prior to the event. You can't always react in the event and then try to do something. By then, it's most probably too late. So I think to answer your question more directly, I think a lot of communication with our clients, that's very, very important. And at the same time, a well-diversified portfolio, as conventional as what that may seem as a response, that is the most effective way of dealing with it.
You know, on an empirical level, one does see that when you look at the returns that indexes like the S&P 500 have had over a long period, despite things like the global financial crisis, COVID-19, etc., that generally there is an upward trend. So investors that have probably been in the game for a while or who understand the nature of the market would probably see what's going on as probably being, you know, something to be expected. Yes, it can be a bit scary and there's a lot of uncertainty, but that's just how the markets work. But on the ground, you know, since you guys are in direct contact with your clients, we keep hearing about, you know, investor confidence, etc. So just given what's happened over the last couple of weeks together with COVID-19, from your purview, how do you gauge the mood of investors when it comes to how they feel about the security of their investments at the moment?
Yeah, and that's again quite unfortunate. I mean, I've mentioned what we've seen more recently in terms of flows going into more conservative products. But I think that's the trend that we've seen over a few years now, actually. A lot of inflow sitting on either the conservative side or going offshore. So a lot of offshore investment taking place at the moment. So it does definitely erode confidence in local investments. The irony there is I think there's actually opportunity in the South African equity market at the moment, given that our market has been what they say, derated quite significantly. So that's just to say how the valuation multiples have come down. So essentially investors have penalized South African assets given the prevailing risks and poor sentiment. So I think, you know, if we can improve the confidence levels from foreign investors, local investors and business, then I think there's an opportunity there. So that's maybe quite a big ask to ask for. We did actually see the South African Reserve Bank's leading indicator trending much higher, through this year. And that's why we saw the comments from the MPC yesterday as well, essentially saying much of the good work that was done in the first 6 months of the year is being completely eradicated by the civil unrest that we've seen. So that's really quite unfortunate. I think we were on quite a good path. Our current account hasn't looked this good in a very long time. And what we've managed to do is to benefit from higher commodity prices. It's been good for our current account. It's been good for taxes. It's good for employment, so many things. And then you see events like this. And I think that's why, you know, it doesn't help. We spend so much time working on things in terms of getting the economy right. And then our reaction times are as poor as what they were over the last few weeks in terms of sorting out the civil unrest. And like the Reserve Bank governor said, we ultimately eradicate a lot of that good work. So I think at the moment, obviously, you know, having the recent events so fresh in our memories, and with offshore investors having very short-term memories as well, I don't think sentiment indicators look very good at the moment. But that being said, my hope is that we learn from the mistakes that were made over the last couple of weeks. And then at the same time, many of the factors that counted in our favor are still around. Higher commodity prices are still there. Valuations are still attractive. Earnings revisions from our listed corporates are mostly good. If we look at the global industrial cycle, economic growth around the globe is in a very good recovery mode, and emerging markets will benefit from that. So I think those are all good things that we should really be jumping on the opportunity and try to harvest as much benefit out of that and stop scoring own goals. I think if we can just do that, we'll be on a much better path, and improvement in the confidence will unlock a lot. If we can just get the business and consumer sentiment together with the offshore investor sentiment sorted out, then I think there's a lot of opportunity actually.
As we come to the end of the discussion, Adrian, I want to zoom in on South Africa's place in the global economy. We touched on it when we are talking about unrest in other parts of the world, but economically, just looking at the fact you highlighted that leading indicators from the South African Reserve Bank look to be good at the moment, but at the same time, sentiment, you know, around South Africa itself seems to be in a bad place, and we spoke about the own goals that are being, you know, scored against South Africa at the moment. And sometimes I think we unfortunately find ourselves, you know, being very sort of writing these very dire sort of predictions about the South African economy and doom and gloom, but within the context of the rest of the world, how is South Africa doing, more particularly when it comes to its emerging market peers, because that's usually the group that South Africa is most compared with. Someone will sit and say, well, you know, a flare-up in the United States and the flare-up in South Africa are not the same, you know. They have a much better economy than we do. You know, when you compare with other emerging markets, that might be, you know, a little bit of a better sort of comparison. So from that point of view, economically, when you look at the indicators or whatever you're keeping your eye on, how is South Africa doing?
Well, I think if you look at the last 10 years or so, I think what we've seen is a big move away from emerging markets into developed markets, in particular the US. So everything that's denominated in US currency typically did quite well. And emerging markets suffered under that. Commodity prices were generally lower. And we've seen a reversal of that. So there's still, even on the international investor space, there's a concern around US valuations. And there's a lot of capital tied up in US markets at the moment. But if you look at the equity opportunity on the S&P 500 and you look at US bonds, the prospects aren't necessarily looking extremely attractive. So a lot of that capital is finding new homes in areas that offer higher yields on bonds, a better outlook for equity investments, et cetera. So I think that move is set to reverse. Part of it also revolves around higher commodity prices. It's a big component in terms of igniting the economy. It has many benefits in most emerging markets, and South Africa is certainly no different to that. So if you think about higher commodity prices, typically, as I said, leads to better company profits of all our miners. It leads to better tax revenues. It helps the employment numbers locally, within the mining groups. It reduces the financial onus on the state in terms of supporting vulnerable communities because they become more self-sufficient in those areas. It improves foreign sentiment toward our fiscus. It improves sovereign ratings. The list goes on. So I think that component is really doing well quite at the moment. The agriculture space had its own set of challenges, just given the droughts that we experienced. You'll recall from a few years back when really things were quite dire. Crops were at record level lows, and we really had hardship in that portion of the primary sector. What we see now is things are looking much, much better. Rainfall has been good. Agriculture is up. If you look at the agriculture technology that's deployed in some of our more commercial orientated farms, it's astonishing. We're actually leaders in that space. So I think there we're doing well. The problem that we have is very much around the manufacturing space. So it's a big employer, that secondary sector of the economy. So that's the area where we need to get more employment going. And that's why foreign investment becomes important. We need people to set up factories in South Africa, feel comfortable that the property is safe here, there aren't security risks to that property that they put down here, plants, etc. And that will help the employment component as well. So I think that's really the weakness in our environment. But if you look at the tertiary sector around services, that's doing quite well. There's many firms that are doing quite well. But if you look at our banks, for example, they are always trading lower from an investment perspective because there's still challenges within the country in terms of economic growth and uncertainty in that environment. So typically when there's a bad view on SA, those SA Inc. type counters, that's what they often refer to. And banks sit right in the middle of those. They tend to track lower as well. So, but our banks are well capitalized and the economy should recover. And some of the positives that we see out of agriculture and mining will start to filter through into some of the other areas of the economy and start to do well again. At the moment, we are still actually underperforming other emerging markets. So that's not good. But I think there is definitely a uptick in emerging market interest from foreign investors. So investors are looking at emerging markets, and it's incredibly important that South Africa becomes top of mind again. We used to be a very top of mind investment location for investors seeking out emerging market exposure, and we've lost some of that shine through multiple failures on the corporate and state side. So that's the stuff that we need to fix. Our president has done quite a bit in terms of speaking to foreign investors to try to get that sorted out. But like I said, these other things on the ground is really doing quite a lot of damage. That's why I'm actually more concerned around the impact that it has on investor confidence from abroad than just the immediate impact, which is already quite significant.
And one certainly hopes that work is done to get South Africa back to that place where it is top of mind when people are thinking about, their entry into emerging markets, their exposure to, let's say, the continent, Africa, and also at the same time, that confidence we do make the actions, or we do the actions that actually increase that investor confidence. Lastly, I want to touch on the rand because we've seen some interesting movements in the rand over this year. There was some rand strength that we saw earlier this year, but over the last couple of weeks, we've seen some weakness. And certain some market players said that it was all due to the unrest that we saw over the last couple of weeks, but I think I saw you saying that no, this is in fact because of, you know, US dollar strength rather than what was happening here. So maybe you could just talk to us as we end off.
Yeah, sure. If you look at what happened with the dollar and some of the other currencies around the globe over that period, is obviously we had some weakness in the rand. And why we say that's dollar strength is if you look at what happened with the euro and the sterling, it depreciated by similar levels to the dollar as what the rand did. So it's not a uniquely South African thing. I think we could ascribe the rand weakness purely to the events locally if all other currencies remained stable and only South Africa depreciated, but that wasn't the case. And I think it's a common mistake that's made in South Africa. People try to gauge South Africa's or the sentiment towards South Africa by looking at the currency alone. You often see headlines around a cabinet reshuffle and what happened to the rand. And quite frankly, the dollar is far more dominant in that equation than what the rand is. And I think the perception is that the tail is wagging the dog around, but it's really not the case. So what we did see in the US is renewed fears around the Delta variant and COVID cases come up. We saw the pressure in the US bond market as well, which has been very volatile for a period of time. So the growth outlook is under pressure again. Those things change almost week by week at the moment. And then obviously, if there's less interest in emerging markets or the typically what they call the risk-off trade, a lot of money flows back into the US. So emerging market currencies suffer and the dollar does quite well. And then typically the bonds tend to do a bit better as well. And then maybe lastly on that point, it's really important to understand that to a certain extent, South Africa is a victim of its own success on this one, because our financial markets are actually quite developed and sophisticated in relation to other emerging markets, and our currency is quite liquid. So for larger developed market investors who seek out emerging market exposure, they do like our currency. But when that appetite changes, then we bear the brunt of it. So you'll see our currency relative to other emerging markets, it does tend to be quite a bit more volatile.
So that's Adrian Pask, who is the Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, giving us some insight into how South Africa is doing, but more importantly, how perceptions around the South African economy have been shaped by recent events, most recently the unrest that's been seen in South Africa's two biggest economic hubs, that is KwaZulu-Natal and mostly Gauteng, but at the same time, also relating that what's been happening is not unique to South Africa, because there's a lot of flare-ups going on around the world, sort of pointing more and more to the fact that people are increasingly dissatisfied with the growing gap between rich and poor. But he's saying that at the same time, there are a lot of good indicators that South Africa has, you know, certain surpluses in terms of, you know, surpluses and the like, which puts South Africa in a good place according to the South African Reserve Bank. But the events of the last week, more than anything else, he says, are likely to have hurt the investor confidence, which is very important as South Africa tries to get its place back as a go-to emerging market sort of country to invest in. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Madiwa. Enjoyed the discussion.
One of the things that really does seem to keep recurring is the fact that As a global economy, a global modern society, we seem to have found ourselves at a place where we're grappling with current economic structures. That was one of the big takeaways from the discussion with Adrian. The fact that he mentioned, you know, those 25, incidents of, civil unrest, and the fact that this growing gap between rich and poor in different countries is, causing all of these different incidents of unrest. And while it may be easy to look at just the South African economy and just to look at what's going on locally, it does sort of help having that global context, because it sort of helps to see that firstly, South Africans are not alone in the type of issues that they're seeing and facing on the ground. But more importantly, it does point to the fact of what does this mean for the global economy going forward. What's going to be the economic structure of, different countries, whether developed or developing? Because clearly there's something that's wrong. What is the place of government leadership? What is the place of the private sector businesses, right, in all of this to fix some of these imbalances? Because, just going back to the quote, the Justice Malala quote that Adrian referred to, the fact that, they're saying that in South Africa, we're likely to not see proper change if it doesn't have to do with some type of a revolution. And it seems, it's a very scary thing when you think about it from that point of view. But when you then think about the pressure that is on people at the moment, the fact that so many people have found it so hard just to go through the pandemic period, and even before the pandemic, things were already bad. All of these different pressures compounding one on top of the other on ordinary people, on ordinary people just trying to make ends meet, it does seem as if, and at the end of the day, they do say sometimes the definition of stupidity is, trying the same thing, more than once and expecting different results. And after some time, people are going to stop doing the same thing and they're going to try something different, and who knows what different actually looks like. So that question of what's the global economy going to look like going forward is going to be a very important thing that we have to keep an eye on. And hopefully leaders in the private and public sector do come to the table across the world, in South Africa, since this is where we are, to help what's actually going on, just so that we can prevent any future unrest, and just to make our society way more equitable. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.